Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, hosted by Dr. Ryan Mauley and Travis Buzzell. Join us on this journey as we educate the patient population, inform today's medical providers, and inspire tomorrow's medical leaders through education and in-depth discussion. We can all discover today's best healthcare solutions. Now, sit back and enjoy Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Mauley, along with my co-host,
Travis Buzzell.
And today, we have a great guest. All of our guests and the theme of this podcast is really centered around how do we influence physicians, particularly those that are interested in private practice. Maybe they're currently employed or previously employed, and they are looking for freedom, right? They want to get those golden handcuffs off. They want to be able to thrive on their own clock and have that autonomy. But it's becoming ever more challenging to do that in today's healthcare world. So we've had a star lineup of guests thus far to kind of
really
help support us. From our first guest was Dr. Adolph Lombardi. We've had Physicians First Bancorp with Marty Nichols. We've had investment people.
Amanda Hill,
an attorney that helps people, get out of jams all the time with contracts. Who else? We had Stu Brandon on here. But tonight's guest, I'm super excited. I've been interacting with him through LinkedIn and just some private phone conversations and text messages about some other interesting projects. But without further ado, Matthew Ray Scott.
Welcome.
Hey, it's great to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity. I've had the opportunity to listen to your other podcast. And knowing many of those folks that you interviewed, I'm getting ready to lower the standard of excellence pretty quickly. So I'll do my best.
Well, I got to say, just from the look of that beard, I don't believe a word of that. So
I'm lowering the standard of our own podcast because I don't have a beard like you guys.
Yeah, Travis, you and I were talking. It's a cross that you and I have to bear.
It is.
Majestic facial hair. I know we keep it humble.
We do.
Yeah. And that helps. I really believe that helps.
Beat them off.
But hey, it's a pleasure to be here. One of the things that gets really interesting about what you're doing is, number one, the podcast format is so unique for long-form conversation that is different than short-form narratives that we get bits and glimpses of people along the way. And it allows you to kind of dive deep into subject matter as well as personal meets professional. So I really like what you're doing. It's registering. Dr. Mauley, you and I have like-minded orthopedic friends. You two are creating a buzz, and that's a good place to be.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, so. No, I appreciate that. That's very kind words, especially from a guy that's been in the industry for a long time. And you have, Travis and I were just reading your bio that you sent over. I'd like to really start there just because I don't think that who you are today is best understood if we don't understand who you were 20, 25, 30 years ago, because you have such an interesting background. And I'm not going to do it justice. So why don't you just share from the beginning?
Yeah. Unconventional foundations provide for conventional opportunities for sure. In my case, I went to a military academy. I had a service commitment. My father was a career military officer. I knew that I wanted that experience of becoming, in my case, an Army officer, and had the opportunity from an experience standpoint to initially be what's called a Medical Service Corps officer. And so, Dr. Mauley, this will resonate with you. I worked on what's called FAST teams, forward area surgical teams, and the PAs and the surgeons were all orthopedic. And, I don't have to say this just because you're on this podcast. They were multifaceted. They could jump out of perfectly good airplanes. could fast rope from helicopters and, you know, could do life-saving treatment far forward on the battlefield. And so that was my initial kind of approach to what you and I would consider orthopedics and my interest in healthcare. When I returned from Iraq, I had the opportunity to go to graduate school, and it became a pivot for me. Because I was at that time in a healthcare coded position, I had the opportunity to get my master's in healthcare management. But you see, I had this quirky background. I was a behavioral psychologist by academic training, and I graduated with my master's degree, and then I went back to jumping out of airplanes for a living. And I was at kind of an interesting intersection. I was a captain, one child who, when she was born, 3 months later, I left on massive deployments. Out of the first 2 years of her life, I was there 4 months out of that entire, you know, time period. And
Matthew,
so
sorry to interrupt.
In my case, I had
Gulf War time.
Gulf War.
Okay, so yeah. Early '90s.
Early '90s. You know, 91. So I was in the, you know, I was in the time frame of, you know, invasion of Panama, Gulf War, and then the humanitarian conflict crisis in Bosnia. And so that was my tenure and area of concentration during that time period. But something really critical happened for me is when I returned to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, where I was stationed at, I had a mentor suggest to me that this concept of psychological warfare was an interesting twist for me. And there's the unconventional aspect, right? Meaning I was in a conventional situation, and then I was accepted into the psychological warfare program, and it changed everything for me because I then began to have my first glimpse of understanding how people think, how people make decisions. In my case, I transitioned from that particular unit to a focus on psychological warfare, propaganda development. That would become a precursor to focusing on branding. And I'll fast forward through the next steps. I began to be recruited by MedTech in areas of sales, branding, because of that kind of quirky neuroscience, psychology background. So the logical cohorts, you know, Smith & Nephew, NuVasive, Medtronic. And then I was part of a co-development team that we were able to start a biotech company, and we sold our company to Medtronic for 16 times earnings. And at that point, I made the decision that I was going to transition into what we know today as physician branding. And I saw it as a real challenge. It's kind of like what you talked about, Dr. Molly, that modern day surgeons are a brand by default. And once modern day surgeons understand the definition of modern day branding and understand that it's leading with self-awareness and not self-promotion, and once they understand, like the listeners of your podcast, the dynamics of how to earn attention and how to develop know, like, and trust, it's as practical as anything that you could be doing as a surgeon. But the word branding comes with head trash. And I could see that. And so today, Feed the Agency operates, you know, across 3 locations in the United States. We opened up a new location in Milan, Italy, in January, and we work with some of the leading surgeons as well as med tech in the area of how do I align technology with physicians? That's the med tech piece. All of, you know, some of these companies you're already working with, Dr. Molly, on a daily basis. And then our real passion, which is our operating system, is how do we take the Dr. Molly's, with all due respect, by economic definition, a crowded market space where there is a surplus of patients, and respectfully, there is lots of choice as far as orthopedic surgeons. And so what we specialize in is helping you to understand 7 years worth of data in this very fancy, overwhelming. Travis, I know right now that this is blinding you with technology. I know that it's quite intimidating for you and I, the non-initialed people at the end of this conversation. But this is 7 years worth of data. And we've been teaching surgeons, you thought that branding was self-promotion. It's not. You thought that branding was an inside-out job. It's not. It's an outside-in approach based on the data of how your ideal patients choose you, Dr. Molly. And once you understand the algorithm, then you get to be yourself and you get to use what we call trust triggers to avoid the traditional money pit of marketing. And that's my passion, and that's what we're most known for.
What does FEED stand for? Is it an acronym or?
Okay. Please take a sip of that great wine that you sent me.
That because you this is going to warrant for the podcast.
Yeah, because it lasted 17 minutes from my doorstep. I don't have purple stained teeth for nothing. So I'm grateful for that. So here's the story behind FEED. When we sold our company to Medtronic, per the advice of my Kingsman Scottish-born father, my dad said, Matthew, if you have the chance to take a mini sabbatical hyphen mini retirement, do it. So I had the money to do that, and I groveled to sweet Sandy, my wife of 38 years now. We got married when we were 20. And I groveled to my wife, sweet Sandy, and said, I want to go to culinary school. And she said, do you want to work at a restaurant and be a chef? And I'm like, nope. It was 78 grand when I went. And that was, you know, circa 2008. And she said, well, why do you want to go? And I said, I just want to be able to cook really great for family and friends. So the whole time I'm going to culinary school and knowing that I'm not going in that industry, I was planning on this unique physician brand agency. And I don't know about you guys, but some of the best conversations and business deals that I've ever made over a glass of wine and breaking bread at a table.
Amen.
Was born FEED.
Did we just become best friends?
Travis, I already told him he needs to
come into town. I can grab my man purse.
Dude.
It's kind of a cross satchel if I have to.
Where do you live?
Depends upon the day of the week.
Yeah, we're blessed to be, you know, our kids, we're at a different season.
Sure.
That our kids are all out of the house. And so it is true that, you know, we can pick up and go to different locations, but primarily, you know, right here in the thriving metropolis of Springdale, Arkansas, otherwise known as God's Green Acre.
Razorbacks, baby.
I cannot tell you how many surgeons and people on LinkedIn that have contacted me and they're like, hey, I'm flying into Northwest Arkansas. Can I hang out with you and your hillbilly friends? They'll stay at the house. It kind of sounds something similar to you, Dr. Molly, with that pad you've got.
Yeah.
And we just pun intended, we feed people. And it turns out if you're an orthopedic surgeon, you want to hang out in the back pasture in Northwest Arkansas around a fire pit. And that's what I just figured out.
Well, I know where we're going before the end of the year.
And then San Diego is our other home away from home.
Okay. Like Carlsbad, La Jolla, like where about, or like San Diego?
May I be bougie with you?
Hit me. What you got? La Jolla's pretty bougie, man.
Yeah, Del Mar.
Oh, okay. Here you go. Yeah. Bougie.
So it's a shade of pretentiousness under La Jolla.
Exactly. So I used to work for a company based out of Irvine. So I spent a lot of time in Southern California. My first thought, so I don't want to be cliche or anything, but I did want to just mention, so you kind of went through your background and stuff like that. So I just want to say thank you for your service. That resonates with me. I was kind of telling you when we were talking offline, one of my very best friends, I mean, growing up with and, you know, just my whole life, he's an Army Ranger, airborne. He's a captain right now, just turned over command to, from the battalion that he had. And he's actually headed to Fort Bragg on his next assignment. And, you know, I know his family, you know, they have been with us, you know, through many of his deployments. And I know that that's not easy in the sacrifice you guys make. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Hey, your buddy, just ask him. He's living the dream. He's part of the Fort Bragg Mafia right now. And he's walking on post, wearing a fancy beret. And he's part of the Fort Bragg Mafia. And there's no place that he'd rather be. That's exactly what he's thinking. And that's all of us young captains. It's the way that we thought.
I'll be sending him a link to this podcast as soon as it gets released. So, listen, for me, and it's kind of funny. I mean, Dr. Molly and I were kind of talking, and you guys had an opportunity to catch up, you know, over the last couple of weeks, and we've been trying to get connected. But I mean, everything that you're saying, and I have some specific questions about, you know, your algorithm and the data, right? Because that's a big buzzword right now, especially selling companies and, you know, that sort of stuff, acquisitions. It's like data is kind of the buzzword there for people. But everything that you're saying resonates with me a lot. I mean, I think Dr. Molly would tell you, it's like, it's a genuine approach to a conversation where there are solutions to problems that maybe you didn't know you had. There is a kinship amongst like-minded people, or maybe even people that you never could imagine. Like, I have something in common with this guy, but you know, it's through a conversation, right? It's just like selling is one of those things where it's like, I'm not selling you anything. Like, we're just having a conversation. And, you know, maybe at the end of this conversation, there is some type of mutual benefit, right? Because if only one person is getting something out of that conversation, that never lasts. It just doesn't. And so, you know, I've learned that over, you know, a 15-year, you know, med device career and transitioning into kind of my own stuff and all my partnerships with Dr. Molly. It's like everything that you're saying, the campfire that, you know, to be able to get to that point is like when real conversations happen and when you can take something that's mutually beneficial and something that really is going to drive change, that's when like the work starts, right? And that's when you hit the pavement running. And those are the things that last. And those are the projects and the relationships that I have seen kind of garner, you know, the best sort of outcomes, right?
Yeah, that's well said, Travis. You know, I can summarize what's important to patients and surgeons in a few words. For Dr. Molly and those like him, trust is his currency and his reputation is his bank account.
I love that.
And so if you anchor that phrase and you live it out, then it goes back to what's the modern definition of branding. And you know, the modern definition for Dr. Molly and those like him is it's who you say you are, doctor, who your patients say you are, and who Google says you are. And so if you buy into that premise, and then, you know, Dr. Molly knows, you know, this is the book that Dr. Scott Sigmund and I, you know, are about to release, that it again puts the practical component of branding and it diminishes the, I got to find some tattooed hipster creative to come up with the next great idea. Yeah. It allows, I mean, it turns out that the Dr. Mollies of the world are data and sequence junkies. Why else would we choose Dr. Molly to do, you know, procedures on us if he wasn't a sequence, system, process-oriented person?
It's like he knows
you. And so all we did with branding is we put it into an operating system that you already abide by. You already, when you stand tall in that operating room, you already have a code of pathology meets prognosis, prognosis meets procedure. Why would branding be any different? And that's how we made it practical.
So when is your and Scott's book coming out? I've seen you guys promoting it here for a while, and I'm eager for this, but when's the release date?
Yeah, so here was our lesson into the word publishing. So the book is written. It turns out that doctors don't know how to use commas. And majestically bearded liberal arts majors, apparently we don't know how to frame paragraphs. So that was news to Dr. Sigmund and I. All that to say, just today, I met with the editor and the publisher, and so it's scheduled to drop next month. And so, yeah, it was a new process for us. The writing of the book came pretty quickly for us.
Can you walk me through that process?
Yeah, how do you write a book?
Like how long did that take? When did you guys? Because it had to be over a glass of wine or some bourbon or something like that, right? Your first conversation, and you wrote an idea down on a napkin, and then all of a sudden you guys are talking to each other once a week, then twice a week, yeah. Then, hey, we should write a book together.
Yeah, I'll give you the executive summary version. So this was probably 6 years ago. I get a call. I'm in San Diego. And I do need to let you two know that I am captain of the Clydesdale Surf Club. It's a prestigious club. Dr. Molly, you're not able to join us because you don't weigh over 200 pounds. Travis, maybe.
You guys obviously have talked offline. He definitely weighs more than 200 pounds.
Yeah, and Travis weighs about 5 pounds less than me, but he's 15 inches shorter than me. So
he's all forehead, no, though, honestly. I heard
you need to look in the mirror, bro.
Yeah, my buddy Stu Brandon and I were doing a project with Dr. Chris Palmer, and Stu was there, and he told me you got some hops as part of your background. He told me a little bit about you. But long story shorter, I'm literally in a wetsuit. I've got 17 people on a beach. We're getting ready to go surfing with this Clydesdale Surf Club that we started. And I picked it up, and
can I ask,
I
what is the
recognized Dr. Sigmund, but I,
what's the meaning of Clydesdale? Is that
like, big, large?
Okay.
Like big horses,
means,
Clydesdale
it means
horses.
That you're a large horse.
Yeah.
No, I know what that. Okay.
And,
so you, okay.
And so like Travis, for like marathons and stuff like that, if you weigh over 200 pounds,
I got you.
Which
okay.
Allegedly I do. Then you're called a Clydesdale.
I gotcha. Okay. All right.
And yeah. So Dr. Sigmund had called me, had a conversation with him. It was in reference to what he was starting with OrthoLaser. He knew about our agency, and we had a conversation. That conversation led to us working with him individually, working with OrthoLaser, et cetera. And then it developed a friendship. And over that time period, there was a new OrthoLaser that was opening up here in Northwest Arkansas. And Dr. Sigmund flew, we had already traveled and done, you know, professional videos for Dr. Sigmund and OrthoLaser, et cetera, et cetera. So he flew out here for the grand opening of the OrthoLaser in Northwest Arkansas. So I, of course, you know, I pick him up, bring him to God's Green Acre, Boston boy, wide-eyed with, you know, what is that? And I said, it's a cow. What is that? It's a horse. You know, I did all of the, you know, mentoring things that Boston doctors need. And he and I went to a pub that a buddy and I invested in.
Did he have the fro at that point?
Buddy of mine. Oh, yeah.
He was throwing it then?
Full on Fletch.
Okay.
He was like Will Ferrell, Tropic Thunder meets Fletch.
Nice.
Jackie.
Oh, yeah. It was a prodigious afro. And so it was at that bar, at that pub, that he and I started brainstorming ideas. And the writing of the book is not difficult. / sitting down for two people to write a book is difficult. But, you know, he, and I'm not just saying this, he's got such a skill set in, you know, summarizing key messages. And then, you know, I know how to write. I know how to communicate. And I knew about the branding part. And, you know, I've worked with orthopedic surgeons my whole career. So I at least had an understanding of what you all needed. And then Dr. Sigmund did a great job of just putting an editorial thumbprint on it really, really well.
You write a chapter, he writes a chapter, or were each chapters having your fingerprint on it, both of you?
Both of us.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the right way to go. We used, you know, a project management tool called Basecamp. You know, we did it together. That was the way to go. So that way, there was not a narrative voice that was either dominant brand guy or dominant orthopedic surgeon. It was an integrated narrative transportation where people will go, yeah, I got a feeling that Matthew weighed in on this comment. And then, oh, I got a feeling that Dr. Sigmund, you know, anchored his insights here. I'll just tell you guys need to write a book.
Well,
and
that's why I'm asking you all these questions.
Yeah. The reason why you need to write a book, it's going to be a little contrarian. The best reason to write a book is it will force you / challenge you to define how you're unique, how you're solving problems in a way that the day-to-day conversations / LinkedIn world does not force you and I to be unique. And the process, especially the written process, the process of taking what's here, having the standard of this cannot be the 17th layer of the same branding stuff that everybody else is doing, or this must be rooted in the dynamics of private practice meets private equity, you know, all the dynamics that are impacting you guys as specialty surgeons. We wrote the book for specialty surgeons, and that was a good choice. We, with all due respect, we didn't write it for anybody outside of that specialty surgeon track. And so what that means is we'll sell less books, but we had an opportunity to go deep and far into the guidance that we give that matters to the dynamics of you being an orthopedic surgeon or a neurospine guy or a foot and ankle, you know, what have you. So, yeah.
I'm curious, like, were you actually writing?
It's been a fun process.
Like, handwriting stuff, typing stuff? Like, how does that even? I'm picturing, you know, you mentioned Fletch earlier, right? Well, I'm thinking of Funny Farm when he goes and he starts writing his book and, you know, he gets distracted here and there. And I just remember going to school for as many years as I did. I'd start to write a paper and I'd find a million and one reasons to stop writing that paper until it was due the next day, and then I'd sit down and write my 25-page paper. So did you set parameters? Were you guys typing stuff so that you could share it back and forth? How did all that work?
We used a project management software called Basecamp. And Basecamp allowed us to have a centralized headquarter that took the conversation out of email or Google Docs or whatever, meaning I'd log in at ODARC 30 in the morning, Scott Sigmund would log in at whatever time, and whatever updates, it had real-time updates. Mm. So what was great for Scott and I is, you know, he and I, we learned we have different flow patterns. So he's a night owl, and I'm like an Amish farmer. If it's 9 p.m., with the exception of Friday, you know, I'm headed to the bunk. But
me too.
I'm standing tall at 4:07 a.m. And
me
that's
too.
So we work really, really well on that. And you know, what he excelled at was first draft, his ability to slay unnecessary words, which is part of the talent of this, right? Meaning I'm a branding guy. It would make sense that, you know, that I would have, you know, paragraphs that could be, you know, could allow him to kind of weigh in on. And it was a really great process. And then, you know, he and I, along the way, we would meet in person and all that. But here's the interesting thing, Dr. Molly. In that bar in the thriving metropolis of Springdale, Arkansas, everything that he and I planned on has come true.
Wow.
I love it.
Did you have a set
and
of goals?
So it sounds like you guys have a kind of a similar relationship to Dr. Molly and I. It's like, you know, in terms of like accountability and setting timelines and goals, like, you know, things happen, but like, how did you keep like, and how, like how closely did you, you know, stay on target or on, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So it turns out that a Dr. Molly needs a Travis, and Travis, you need a Dr. Molly. The beard needs a fro, and the fro needs a beard.
I definitely need a fro.
And
I had a fro back in high school.
It turns out that,
Jay,
you know,
picture of that right here.
Dr. Molly is going to have skill sets and strengths that are different than yours, and vice versa. And what worked out really, really well for Dr. Sigmund and I is, as far as accountability goes, we knew that we were doing something unique in the area of branding as an outlier. And, you know, he and I had already had history. We were already going down the opioid sparing cause marketing campaigns, you know, hey, TED Talk's gonna take our call. You know, we were already going down that trail together. And so, you know, there was a level of respect there. What I will tell you is, on the area of accountability, you know, he and I, just like you two, you know, we're busy, but what I will tell you is writing for Dr. Sigmund and I was cathartic, in that we just did not, I mean, you know this athletically, Dr. Molly, you know this, when you're a team, you don't struggle to finish well. You just do it because there's a level of accountability and respect there. So with Dr. Sigmund and I, you know, if he's got to worry about me working, that's an issue. And vice versa. If I got to worry of, you know, hey, is his authentic voice going to be in that book? There's a problem. And we just haven't had that problem. It's not been an issue for he and I. And I think that, and I don't want this to sound too old fashioned, but he and I knew our roles.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to play a doctor, and he wasn't trying to be the brand guy.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And I think that there's a mutual level of respect there where together we made branding practical. And, you know, I mean, in that bar, the book, Ortho Laser, kind of his individual public visibility, staking an intellectual copyright in opioid sparing, you know, all those things that, you know this well, Dr. Molly, of being approached by MedTech and et cetera, making careful choices. We had already talked through that. You know, we've got a follow-on course to the book, which is going to be really a unique community. And then, you know, in this day and age, post-COVID, we're going to have Physician Brand RX conferences. We've already started. People have no idea that we've already done this. We've already broken it down. We were, you know, Scott didn't go on this trip, but we just got back from Italy where, you know, ophthalmic surgeons, in parentheses, ophthalpreneur, orthopedic surgeons, orthopreneur. We just got back from a European tour giving away our best ideas for free that are going to be found in a $11 book. And what I learned very quickly is the, even besides the uniqueness of European healthcare versus American healthcare, you guys are global surgeons. You're thinking beyond pathology meets prognosis, prognosis meets procedure. You're thinking, because in America, I don't have to tell you, you're already going through shrinking reimbursement, a change in patterns. And Europeans are beginning to have certain liberties that force them to think like you, Dr. Molly, private practice. Mm-hmm. And so I love the fact that there are great-hearted surgeons who wake up every day and take care of patients that are thinking through, how do I do what I love in a way that's scalable, in a way that is reproducible, and because you earned it, in a way that's profitable, whether that's operational efficiencies meets, you know, respectfully, you should be paid more than a plumber. For the record, all three of us should have been a plumber or an oral surgeon. I'm convinced that's where the money's at.
Well, I've been joking around for the last couple of years. I'm like, the next set of millionaires in this country are all going to be trades. They're going to be carpenters. They're going to be plumbers. They're going to be electricians, because they're like none of them left. I mean, to get anything, it's kind of funny. Yeah. You know, I joke around about it. Like, my dad is quite useful in many areas. He's the jack of all trades. He's electrician by trade, but I mean, been retired, but I'm like, man, my dad has saved us a pretty penny over the last couple of years.
Putting a new air conditioning unit in our house. He just saved us from having to have our roof replaced. He's fixing our sauna. He's fixing my grill. He called
me this morning. He's like,
yeah, I love professional tradecraft. I'll share a brief story with you. As you guys know, it's not cheap. If you've got a big house, it's not cheap to go through that replacement part. This young dude shows up, just, you know, this young guy, if my daughters weren't married, I totally would have had an arranged marriage if I could have. Love this guy. Hardworking, good-looking guy, former military guy, shows up, starts shirt. He does his due diligence. First of all, he calls me Mr. Scott. So that A, means that you're elderly, and then B, you may be in the South if a young kid calls you Mr. Scott. And he goes, hey, Mr. Scott, I see that you and an orthopedic buddy that you worked with back in the day teach this course on how to use personalized video to scale sales. And so I was impressed with that. which was like the precursor to him charging me like a ridiculous amount of money. But anyways, I told him, I said, I'll tell you what, I'll complimentary train you. All I ask is for a testimonial. So this guy's like the Bear Grylls, you know, adventurer of HVAC repairmen. I mean, this kid takes it to the next level. So he takes this training that we teach at Virtual Sales RX, and I kid you not, he's like hanging off the side of a roof. He's got the phone in one hand, and his videos are like, hey, Mrs. So-and-so, I can save you some money. I found, you know, what was wrong, the squirrels, you know, whatever. The squirrels attacked your attic or, you know, something like that, something crazy like that. And it was at that moment, afterwards, I said, man, that was great. You know, keep doing what you're doing. Turn it into compliant edutainment, et cetera, et cetera. So he made a statement to me. He said, hey, Mr. Scott, if you ever hear about any openings in medtech sales, let me know. I'd be interested in it. And I said, yeah, great. So 3 months later, one of my orthopedic executive buddies calls me up, and I'm like, man, if you're open to an outlier, I got a kid that'll work for you. A six-figure job. And I call up this young man, and I'm like, you got your shot. And I loved his response. He said, Mr. Scott, since learning how to use personalized video to grow my business, he goes, respectfully, I don't want to take a pay cut.
Oh, wow.
How awesome is that? I mean, as a med tech guy, I love the fact that this kid in Northwest Arkansas is thinking like an entrepreneur.
Yeah. By the way, I saw your post and Scott's post, Sigmund's post, earlier today about that 1 minute video sending out to your patients, you know, before they come in for their consultation. Mm-hmm. Absolutely going to do it. It's such a great idea. It'd be a personalized video of me just kind of like, hey, Dr. Ryan Molly, really looking forward to meeting you when you come in for your consultation regarding your upcoming joint replacement. This is why it's so important for this appointment to occur. This is what to expect during this appointment, just to give them the realistic expectations, because you know, a lot of our patients, they think they're coming in for a 10-minute appointment. This is a 2-hour. You don't plan other appointments on this day. It takes a long time. And then just painting realistic expectations. I think I'm going to talk about different surgical scheduling pathways, whether you're traditional versus concierge pathway. And that way they kind of know coming into this exactly what to expect. There's no surprises. There's no curveballs.
Well, I think the other thing too, and Matt, I mean, maybe you could kind of speak to this in terms of like, I know you were talking about like branding and, you know, your background with like, you know, the psychological warfare stuff and the neuroscience thing. Like, I feel like today, especially in the society that we live in, I mean, there's just a lot more access to information, right? And I feel like sometimes that's not necessarily always a good thing because it creates anxiety. And, you know, I see a lot of these people and, you know, back and say, yeah, I'm having surgery today. And not a big deal because, you know, put you under, wake you up and you go home. And now it's just like you're on Reddit or you're on Google and you read about someone's aunt who, I mean, we're talking like less than, you know, a fraction of a percent of like the oh no's, right? I mean, like the surgeons never even had that happen in, you know, tens of thousands of surgeries, right? But people just come in with this sort of, you know, exacerbated level of anxiety and the unknown and the what ifs. And I feel like that piece right there is like, there's a comfort level now, right? You've kind of met this guy, it's virtually, but you hear a little bit about the story, you get to know him, you see his face, you hear him. It's like, oh, right. Cause you see guys, they walk in and out of, you know, an office, a hospital and scrubs. It's like, see a rep, see a doc, like who's that guy? You have no clue who's who. And this just creates this awareness or branding, however you guys want to describe it. But for me, it's like, there's a calming effect about that, right? It like, it creates this space now where it's like, okay, I know who I'm talking to. I have a decent idea of who he is and what he's about. And I know what I'm getting into. And I know what the conversation or the framing of this is going to look like. And for me, it's just like, that just eliminates so much like in headspace stuff, right? Like just the extra kind of like, you know, white noise where it's like, I don't have to worry about that stuff, right? I mean, I can kind of get into this conversation and I know where I'm going. Does that make sense?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. You framed it really, really well. If you buy the premise, let's think through Dr. Molly. If you buy the premise that trust is his currency and his reputation is his bank account, then it would make sense that he would develop trust triggers. And a video is a trust trigger. Yeah. And would you believe me, from a neuroscience standpoint, the human brain, when it sees us on video, it does not draw a dramatic distinction between, you know, Dr. Molly being face-to-face or virtually face-to-face. It doesn't draw a big discriminatory skew on that. So the reason why, in that example, Dr. Molly, that you need to have personalized videos that align with the patient decision-making journey or their experience is because they feel like they know, like, and trust you at every step of the way. And we all know that even though you may want to, you don't have the time to physically be there for everyone.
Right.
And so, again, neuroscience says, give me the choice to watch a 1 minute and 11 second video of Dr. Molly reducing my anxiety for pre-consultation. When the patient meets you, this is in my branding handbook, pre-consultation, consultation, you know, they look up at the tall Dr. Molly. The greatest compliment that you could receive is, you're exactly who I thought you would be, or you're exactly who I hoped you would be. And so what personalized video does, especially for you, Dr. Molly, and then Travis, for you and I as business people,
sure,
it allows you and I as business people to differentiate. Because people in med tech are selling like it's 1994.
They are. No, they are.
Make a song about that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is kind of crazy. You know, I've looked at the lack thereof evolution over the last, I mean, for me, decade, right? Of, you know, from like a med device standpoint, it's like, it's hospital contract selling, right? It's like, if I have a big enough health system and I'm a big enough company and I give them the big enough discount, I mean, then, you know, whatever, you know, Tom, Dick, or Harry, you know, I hire to go in there, essentially is gonna, you've 80%, right? So, I mean, you got to use at least 80% of this stuff to meet this threshold of whatever the discount is. So it's like, that's not really selling, right? That's more like water the plant that I put in the ground. And so it is,
yeah,
it's different. It hasn't changed. It hasn't shifted. But the one thing that I think is really interesting about the conversation that we're having, and I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this question, but the groups and the physician branding and all the stuff that, you know, you guys are doing, I'm assuming are not with big health system physicians, right? They're with private practices, private physicians, right? I mean, is there a split or any of them that, you know, are hospital employed that are having this kind of conversation with you, or like, what does that breakdown look like?
Yeah, this answer I'm about to give surprised me. Up until 2 years ago, it was, you know, the Dr. Molly's.
Yeah.
About 2 years ago, post-COVID, there was a shift that happened. Now, besides the obvious, the plague is here, the sky is falling, social distancing.
Yeah.
Okay, we got the all clear sign. Patients can see Dr. Molly in person. Besides that obvious, here's what COVID did. What COVID did for surgeons is it opened their eyes to, oh man, I have something to say. I want to amplify my voice and I want to learn how to shape my voice so that I can attract more ideal patients, so that I can connect with med tech companies that I have an interest in contributing to, and that I can disrupt referral patterns in my community. And so there was a shift that occurred. So 2 years ago, I won't mention names, but some big academic centers have engaged us. And I think, you know, the Dukes and that kind of category, I think people would find it surprising.
Definitely.
That they're progressive enough to go, we need to, you know, consider how we can, you know, act differently, et cetera. So that's
kudos
that's been
to
a
them
shift
because
for
a,
us.
A lot Same. Of them, I would think, would be like, well, we're going to just do this internally the way that we've always done this, and we don't need to change. And by the way, I didn't want to forget mentioning this. Had the opportunity to obviously meet Dr. Chris Palmer in person last week at the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, or I guess 2 weeks ago now. But what a cool dude. I mean, we had interacted. I think he reached out to me probably 6 months ago now through LinkedIn and just wanted to chat on the phone about some of the stuff I was doing in my practice. And we had a really good conversation, and then we continued to follow each other on LinkedIn. And then we knew we were both going to be at this meeting together. So we hung out every night. I know that just before that,
it's
you
so
and
good.
Stu were visiting him and down in his bar basement and having steaks and bourbon. And I was
Dr.
Like,
Molly, it's you, his bar is a reflection of who he is. Even the way it's organized, like besides the obvious top shelf liquor, it's beautiful. I mean, so besides the whole top shelf part, it was organized like I know how he goes into surgery.
Yeah.
Or how you prepare for surgery. I mean, you might as well had a scrub tech position, you know, in that bar, because I was watching him. I mean, besides the obvious of, hey, Matthew, can I pour you a drink? There was no wasted motion. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. He knew where the bitters were. He knew where the bourbon was. Like, he knew where the cherries were. I mean, he had it all planned out ahead of time, right? When he put things where he put them, just like in my basement where I put things where I put them, I visualized people in this room, and I was like, all right, I want the speakers here. I want this here. The wine's got to be here. We're going to have a nook to put the corkscrew here. We're going to have cigars here, because it's got to make sense flow-wise, right?
Yeah. You and Dr. Palmer remind me a lot of each other in the following way. You live in community populations that I don't think that the LA, New York City, Chicago knows what a beautiful population draw you both have. From PA to St. Louis, it's a beautiful population density that you have. And one of the things that I admired about Dr. Palmer whenever he contacted our agency,
his beard,
he was already the beard. That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. The beard.
It's an elite group. It is an elite group.
And the beard, and this dude clearly weighs over 200 pounds and he likes brown liquid. So that was the draw. But what I admired about him is he's already really busy. So what's been great for us is when we first started, and I mean this respectfully, this phraseology that I'm getting ready, we had practices that get out the paddles, resurrect them from the dead. We don't get that anymore. We get people like you, like Dr. Palmer, you're already busy. But you see, when you glimpse into the future, you're going to make a transition into, I want to be known as the specialist in the specialty. I'm already busy enough, and I want to become, you know, somebody that has the ability to attract more ideal patients from around the country. And so there's some pivot areas, and we don't have to disclose what you and I are talking about, but there's some pivot areas. That's one topic area. So like with Dr. Palmer, our whole campaign for him was, if you're a striker person, you just got to deal with it because I don't work for you. He was making the robot the noun and in his brand. And what we did was we said the robot is smart, but the robot needs a heart. And so we positioned Dr. Palmer as the trusted guide in that Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. And we turned that robot into a verb. And we developed a branded and proprietary protocol, 7 years worth of data, that all of his public-facing communications are in alignment with what where the data points that Mrs. Jones, when she has a choice, here's what's important to her to choose the Dr. Molly's, the Chris Palmer's of the world. Yeah. So what my agency's focused on, everybody thinks we're focused on what to say. And I say, we're focused on what patients hear. And if you're obsessed with what patients hear under the communication delta of what you say and what patients hear, it's not always the same.
Very rarely is it.
And so if you believe that, then, you know, we're obsessed with how they make decisions. And then it becomes a reverse engineer process to go, hey, Dr. Molly, stop calling it a procedure. Hey, Dr. Molly, you know, stop thinking of pain in this respect and communicate how you're solving the intrinsic and extrinsic pain rather than the, hey, I've got pain in my knee, which there's not a patient in America who's struggling to go, I wonder what Dr. Molly does. Yeah. And therein lies the catch-22 for orthopedic surgeons. Most orthopedic surgeons are focused on communicating what they do. And it's a race to the messy middle. Because patients look and all of the public communications are the same. Oh, there'll be cliche phrases like, we treat you like family. But what I know with my background is when you say we treat you like family, we use the latest in technology, the patient goes, compared to what?
Yeah.
Compared to not treating me like a family member? Compared to using outdated technology? So that's how patients think.
Yeah.
And so my agency's in the business of aligning with how they make decisions, so that 10 years from now, Dr. Molly, or maybe even sooner, you're focused on getting patients from all over the country because you have a unique perspective and point of view. You don't speak in terms like joint reconstruction. We turn that noun into a verb and articulate how you're solving a problem. Your crew, turns out that you need to humanize yourself because no one told you that you as a surgeon are not approachable, hence videos. And then here's the wealthiest word that surgeons don't use when it comes to branding: process. Take your step-by-step process, no more than three words, give it the Molly treatment, branded and proprietary protocol. Now you got something special.
Can I just tell you that, I mean, for me sitting here and, you know, having this conversation and listening to that, I wish I could be hooked up to a lie detector test because I would pass it with flying colors. And it also might be because I'm a genius. When you were going through that whole thing, the buzzword in my head that you had not mentioned this entire, you know, conversation during the pod was like humanize. That's what you're doing, right? You're humanizing and making something that seems so foreign, tangible, right? But you're making it like this. I get it, right? But it all goes back to that anxiety, right? And giving them the information and humanizing it, but personalizing it too, right? Which is like one of those things where I feel like that's where the shift is coming, because it's like, you know, I've said this before, right? We've got a mutual friend here that, I mean, I buy cars from, and I might not buy the brand of car that he has, his brand. He goes and gets it for me and brings it to the dealership, and I get it from him because mm-hmm. the experience, everyone there, it's just, it's different. But I go to other dealerships and I'm like, I feel I do. And I talk with the best of them. I mean, I could sell ketchup popsicles to nuns wearing white gloves on the hottest day of the year. And I feel so weird walking in there. It's just, I do. It's like, I don't like it. It's not a good experience for me. But they do that for me. You know, that's like elevated hospitality, something that we've been talking about. Unreasonable hospitality. And no, seriously, I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, so you were interested in the whole culinary school thing. So I knew that you would like The Unreasonable Hospitality. It is a great book. And what's interesting about the book...
By the way, I've been following Will Gadara on LinkedIn. I don't know if you follow him, but he is on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I do. And okay. And I've had the opportunity to reach out, and it's interesting. The reason why I think it's so attractive for orthopedic surgeons to love that book is being in charge of a kitchen, that you can see the similarity between being in charge of an operating room. Oftentimes it occupies the same real estate size-wise. There's a lot going on. Scrub techs, anesthesiologists, you know, just take the cast of characters that are in that room with you, and you're either an orchestra maestro or it's yes, chef. And I think that's why that book resonates with so many surgeons, because it's a similar process of taking charge, you know, in pun intended, you know, a really intense environment, for sure. You know, that aspect, Travis, of humanizing is that the interesting concept, I feel, and why we help surgeons think through personalized video is you can create, similar to what you were talking about, Dr. Molly, about what's the stage that patients are going to take: pre-consultation, pre-surgical, post-surgical, and then what you and I would consider patient ambassadors. And so what happens when you record their feedback, or what happens when you insert yourself virtually into those decision-making stages? I mean, you're not going to talk more than a minute and a half tops for any one of those. Maybe pre-surgical, post-surgical, you're going to talk for 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. But what happens is that you now have become asynchronous. And so the way that trust works is, respectfully, most surgeons are tough to see. It's very transactional. So, you know, I get to meet you in person, but I had to take charge. I had to, quote unquote, pick up the phone, speak with Allison meets Heather. So I initiated that transaction. So the way that video works is you, Dr. Molly, humanize the process. Okay? You humanize the process. And then what happens is you reduce their anxiety. Dr. Molly explained it to me in 1 minute and 47 seconds, so I at least have a clear understanding of what's next. And the other thing that we learned in our data is that patients, you know, because you passed organic chemistry and you've got fancy initials at the end of your name,
barely,
they will not ask you questions at the risk of them appearing ignorant or embarrassed. So we learn this through our data. So even in a situation where, you know, I have pain and I'm coming to you, and it's a big decision that I'm getting ready to make, I have to trust that what you're recommending is what I need and what I don't need. And then I got to trust that you're the craftsman that's going to do that. So if you buy into that trust narrative, video is the trust trigger that makes Dr. Ryan Molly the surgeon that seemingly never sleeps. And the reason why it works so well is because I, Mrs. Jones, choose to press play. 10:01 p.m., 10:01 a.m., Dr. Molly is asynchronous. And when we work with surgeons, we're like, you only got to do 4 videos. This is not like it's a constant upgrade. It's just the 4 videos. We make those evergreen so that you sound professional enough / human enough. And you have an administrator that knows patients that are in that decision-making journey. It's so stinking powerful.
Yeah. Now, I actually created about 60 videos, but those are much more detailed. We're talking about risks, complications. We're talking about specifics of direct anterior hip replacement versus more traditional approaches. So those are very specific, and they are accessed by patients once they're already signed up, already know that that's what they're getting. It's just additional education that they can kind of feed on in little nuggets, as opposed to having to try to hear it all in a 2-hour seminar, which I still provide in person. They like that. But this is like throughout the way, like, I remember him talking about numbness with a direct anterior hip. Yeah. What's the percentage of that, and how long does it last? So a video is extremely powerful.
Oh, it matters.
Yeah.
You know, one of our new solutions that we're getting ready to roll out is informed consent meets personalized video. So, you know, think through the power of informed consent, in this case, a video recording. You know, patient has access to that, meaning you're talking to the patient, it's being recorded, you know, iPad meets something simple. It humanizes informed consent. But beyond the litigious component of that, here's the next words out of your mouth. You have access to this video that allows you to share it with family and friends so that when you need to explain the treatment that you're receiving, they get to actually hear it from me. And we've got data tracking on that video. And so we're no longer surprised that Mrs. Jones, Altoona, Pennsylvania, there's like 22, you know, versions of Cousin Earl, Aunt Elsie Marie, you know, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so what's happening is we turned informed consent respectfully and legally into a branding opportunity.
Yeah.
I love it. No, I think, man, I mean, obviously there's so much to unpack, you know, and I mean, just the conversation we had, we were talking for the last hour and some change here. And I mean, I just feel like we could just keep, you know, kicking this can down the road. Like, there's just so much to talk about, and everything that you guys are doing, I think, is just so interesting. And I just think the approach is, I mean, so unique. I've never heard of, you know, kind of the approach that you guys are taking, but now just getting to know you a little bit and have the conversation, like, just the thought that goes into, I mean, feed and everything, right? I mean, to me, it's like, what do you say? Like, the devil's in the detail, right? And so it's like, I think you guys have done a tremendous job at the detail part of it. And I think that the approach that you guys are taking obviously has, you know, proven to be successful, and I think could be useful to, you know, physicians specifically. I mean, all around the world, all around the country. It sounds like, I mean, global, Italy, Milan, it's all these places that...
Yeah, I want to go there with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been to Italy many times, and that's one of my favorite places on earth, but...
You could pack me up in your suitcase and take me. It's fine.
You would not pass the. You'd be three Clydesdales in there. It's a Clydesdale suitcase.
Yeah. Can I briefly share our kind of we're going to open up an Italy story?
Please.
Yeah.
So, an orthopedic buddy and I, we were both at Smith & Nephew together back in the day. We created that course that you're aware of, Travis, Virtual Sales RX and Physician Video RX. So this lady signs up for one of our coaching options, and I was in the queue to conduct the coaching. And she grew up in Alabama. She married an Italian surgeon. She had a quick ascension to corporate promotions. They live in Milan. And so she had talked to me about, hey, you know, I want to take some of your ideas, implement them in my husband's practice in Italy, and then kind of see where it goes. Well, that went great. Well, in January of this year, we're like, she's awesome. You know, she's got a similar background to us in that she's got marketing, biz dev,
sure,
creative components. And that's when we were like, we need to open up an office. We do have quite a bit of business in Europe, which helps. But so, yeah, we made her essentially our European director. And it helps that, you know, she speaks different languages, but her cultural IQ is high, or EQ is high. You know, she understands globally how surgeons think. And yeah, I mean,
love it.
What I'm realizing as we exponentially grow our business is just increasingly you as surgeons have to think globally in the demands of patients and then the demands placed upon you from restrictive agencies, policies, etc. It's no longer fair to say that the orthopedic surgeon on Harley Street is thinking different than the private practice that you have. Those lines are blurred. They're just, you know, we're starting to see surgeons go, man, I've got to compliantly and creatively think different, or I'm going to get my butt handed to me, either from default academic center or from the other practice, which has figured out how to earn attention better than you.
Yeah. Great points.
So, Matt, I mean, listen, great information, great content. I mean, it's just, I mean, blown away. I knew by just reading a little bit about you that this was going to be an explosive conversation, and I knew that we were going to get along really good. So, you know, for all of the viewers, subscribers, all those folks out there, you know, listening to the podcast. So, and Jay can put this right here. How do people find you? How do they get a hold of you? I mean, those private physicians that are looking for branding, that are looking for, you know, an option or an opportunity to have a discussion about how do we approach this differently than we've done for the last 25, 50 years, right? I mean, we don't want to, you know, keep reinventing the wheel. How do we do this differently? How do they find you?
Yeah, thanks for that. Option number one, I made a commitment 5 years ago to give my best ideas away for free on LinkedIn. I'm Matthew Ray Scott on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Secondly, feedtheagency.com is our website. It's chock full of case studies, philosophies, our ethos, and it's the best place to reach me individually and us corporately.
No, it's great. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I can't thank you enough for joining us. Thank you for bearing thank with you. Us. You know, with everything that I've had going on, I appreciate, you know, all the thoughts and prayers that, you know, you'd share with me earlier. And, you know, we're just very grateful to, you know, have you on the podcast. And I think that people are really going to benefit from this conversation. I know that me personally, I'm really excited to, if you're open to it, I definitely want to connect offline here a little bit. There's a lot of,
I like that
similarities.
Yeah.
That I think,
you know, to end this, Travis, you and Dr. Molly have a friendship that's based on respect that can transition into business. And it's good to have a tribe. And it's even better to have a tribe where you have shared goals that can go beyond we hang out on Fridays together. And that's what you two are building.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you can see that. I know that's what we have.
Yeah.
I think we both, just being personally very open and honest, like we have some great ideas, but we gotta go.
Yeah. And I mean, that's part of the challenge, right? It's like we joke around about this all the time. Like both have full-time jobs.
We gotta go.
Yeah, I know. Right?
We gotta move.
We're quitting our day jobs.
Yeah. The fact that you are both busy, this is going to fall under the category of simple, but not obvious. The fact that individually you're healthy in different areas of your life allows you to come together, and you may not realize it yet, but they don't have to be separate agendas. Your ability to come together and solve problems and build businesses together are based on the fact that you're both individually healthy in all the different areas of life. And that way you don't have to go into business together, in partnership together, and doing life together where one of you is not healthy in a primary area of life. And there's something to be said about coming together, as a team, and being able to execute well, because your ability to outsource in certain specialty areas, you can do that. But for sure, the money goes towards the two people who have the idea.
Yeah.
Love it.
Amen. Well, Matt, obviously, thank you. I want to thank you for your time tonight. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. I plan on talking to you when we get off the air here a little bit, just so we can align our schedules for next week and catching up. But for all of our viewers out there, I want to thank you for watching us, for listening to us. I want to encourage you to continue to come back with comments, suggestions, give us likes, give us as many stars as you can, honestly give us, but give us suggestions, give us feedback, give us guests that you'd like to see, topics that you'd like to get discussed. And as always, just want to thank you for your time. Matt, again, thank you for your time. Trav, always a pleasure.
Always. Appreciate it.
If I could do the microphone drop, I would, but red
carpet.
Thank
you, gentlemen.
Out.
As a disclaimer, this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professional from any such conditions.